bed and breakfast with indoor and outdoor space for weddings, receptions, retreats, and meetings on the shore of Alamoosuc Lake in Orland. 469-6393 or alamoosuclodge.com.
This is Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Amy Brown and Meredith DeFrancesco for March 3, 2005. Today we will talk about tomorrow's hearing before the Organization of American States Inter-American Commission on Human Rights, which will examine the violation of housing as a human right in the U.S., Canada, and Brazil. And also today, the Toxic Action Center announces its intent to sue Jasper Wyman blueberry growers for violating the Federal Clean Water Act with their aerial spraying of pesticides. We have with us here by phone line Will Everett, the field director for Toxic Action Center, who is announcing today the intent to sue Jasper Wyman blueberry growers for violating the Federal Clean Water Act with their aerial spraying of pesticides. Welcome, Will.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Great. Now, this is similar, or if not identical, to the lawsuit against Cherryfield not too far back. Can you talk about today's filing and the specifics?
Yes. We are filing using the Clean Water Act citizen suit provisions to file a Clean Water Act citizen suit against Jasper Wyman and Son, the largest supplier of Maine wild blueberries in the United States. And we're doing this because they are violating the Clean Water Act by allowing their pesticides to drift from the airplanes that they use to spray their fields directly into our waterways in down east Maine.
And this, can you talk about how this is similar to the last lawsuit and give an update, if you will, about the Cherryfield lawsuit?
Yep. Cherryfield Foods is has the most blueberry land in Maine under production. It was probably the largest sprayer, pesticide sprayer of blueberries in the state. And we are looking at ways to try to convince them to abandon their aerial spray program. And we announced an intent to sue them under the Clean Water Act to keep them from polluting our waterways. And the way the Clean Water Act works is that when you file an intent to sue, you essentially send a letter to the company saying that you plan on doing this for these reasons. And then the company has 60 days to come into compliance, or it gives the state or federal government 60 days to get the company into compliance. And what happened with Cherryfield is that they agreed to abandon their aerial spray program, which was great. It's immediate health benefit for the environment and of down east Maine.
So they have agreed to stop aerial spraying for good and will now use boom spraying or some other means of applicating pesticides, which they will continue doing.
They're going to use pesticide application methods, so it will reduce the drift. And that's a big concern. What that means is that residents, as well as our waterways in down east Maine, will be less likely to be exposed to toxic pesticides because of this. This is great. And then in November, we met with the president of Jasper Wyman and Son, the second largest grower of blueberries in terms of sheer acreage, and asked them to do what Cherryfield did and abandon their spray program and convert to safer methods of spraying. Essentially, in that meeting, they refused to, and our follow-up with them over the past several months hasn't really led anywhere. So we really see this lawsuit as a last-ditch effort to protect our waterways and enforce the Clean Water Act.
Okay, so now they have 60 days to respond. Now, part of what you were talking about is that's absent in the use of pesticides in Maine is the right to know, citizens' right to know of what is being used. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Right now, citizens, we don't have the right to know how many pounds of pesticides, what pesticides, when, how frequently companies like Wyman's uses and sprays aerially, which means that we, you know, don't know what pesticides are hitting us. We don't know what pesticides are getting into our waterways or ways to protect our community. And what's great is if we enforce the Clean Water Act, and Wyman wants to get a Clean Water Act permit to spray pesticides, what they would have to do is disclose all that information to the public. So that's one benefit that could come out of enforcing the Clean Water Act.
Okay, and currently the Board of Pesticides Control does have a voluntary a program that where companies can voluntarily report their usages.
Yeah, from time to time, the Board of Pesticides Control, that's the agency of the state of Maine that regulates pesticides, issues a survey to blueberry growers and asks them what pesticides they use. Again, it's not how much, and we don't even know necessarily which companies are responding to the survey. It's just to see what types of pesticides are used on those crops.
What types of pesticides have been being aerial sprayed by the big blueberry growers in Maine?
We have, I have two surveys that the state did in 2001 and 2002. And they include herbicides, fungicides, insecticides, with pesticides such as diazinon, which has been it's been taken off the market because it's so dangerous. Other herbicides that, you know, most people have heard of, like Roundup, which contains glyphosate. Fungicides like Captan. It's a long list.
Guthion, Velpar.
Yep.
And
Velpar, which is a herbicide. It kills weeds.
Now, with the Federal Clean Water Act, again, we're talking about how this applies in this case because the aerial spraying directly enters the waterways, and so it's applicable in this case. Can you also talk about how the citizen provision of the Clean Water Act has allowed you, and are there other organizations who are part of this particular lawsuit besides Toxics Action Center, Will?
The other groups are Environment Maine and the Sierra Club, as well as Beyond Pesticides, which is the national.
Can you talk about this citizen provision, which allows citizen groups to do this sort of lawsuit?
And this is one of the best parts of the Clean Water Act, and really what makes the Clean Water Act so great, and that, you know, we should be proud that it's functioning in our country. But it allows for when the state or federal government, when they refuse to enforce the letter and the spirit of the Clean Water Act, allows for citizens to go to the court system and force companies to comply with the Clean Water Act and protect our waterways, you know, even when the state and federal government aren't doing it. So, for example, with pesticides, the letter and the spirit of the Clean Water Act seems to suggest that if pesticides are being sprayed and are directly going from the airplanes that Wyman uses directly into our waterways, that's a discharge into our waterways, and as the Clean Water Act applies. Right now, the state of Maine and the U.S. government aren't enforcing the law like that, so we are saying, hey, this isn't right. The Clean Water Act applies here. In order to do this, Wyman needs a Clean Water Act permit, and so we're going to the court system as a last-ditch effort to enforce this law.
Where can people go for more information on this issue in this particular suit?
Yep. One of the things that they can do is check out our website, www.toxicsaction.org, as well as Environment Maine's website, which is through another statewide environmental group that is in a coalition with us, and that's www.environmentmaine.org.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yes, thanks for having me, Meredith. Have a great day.
Great. That's Will Everett, Field Director for Toxics Action Center, announcing today the intent to sue Jasper Wymans, for blueberry grower, for violation of the Clean Water Act. Now they will have 60 days to respond to this file of intent to sue. Tomorrow, after 6 years of petitioning, the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign will be given a hearing in Washington, D.C. with the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights of the Organization of American States on the violation of economic human rights in the United States, Canada, and Brazil. The emphasis is on housing as a human right. In the United States, more than 3.5 million people are homeless at some point in a given year, 1.35 million who are children. Millions more are at risk because of the lack of affordable housing. We have with us today Maine low-income volunteer activist Jessie Leah Veer with the organization POWER, Portland Organizing to Win Economic Rights. POWER is a low-income-led organization working on securing economic human rights for people in Maine and nationally, including the rights to food, housing, health care, jobs at a living wage, and education. POWER has been an active member of the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign, organizing extensively around the OAS hearing. The testimonies of many Portland residents will be presented at tomorrow's hearing. Tomorrow, POWER will hold a Housing is a Human Right rally in Portland at Monument Square at 4 o'clock in the afternoon to coincide with the hearing in D.C. Thank you so much for joining us today on the phone from Portland, Jessie Veer.
Thank you so much, Meredith. It's such a pleasure to be here with you and all your listeners.
Great. Tomorrow's hearing on the human right to housing before the OAS, Inter-American Commission on Human Rights, is a fruit finally come to bear after 6 years of petitioning. And this is surely a historic significance of this effort that the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign has been working on. Can you talk about the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign?
Sure, I'd love to. The Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign is basically a national network of like over 100 different organizations, just like POWER, all across the country, organizations that are dedicated to economic justice, many, if not most of whom, are actually led by poor people themselves. And basically, this is a campaign that is different from a lot of other social movements in that it's really committed to uniting poor people across color lines as a leadership base for a broad new movement, and a movement that's set out to abolish poverty, similar to, you know, the crimes of slavery that had to be abolished, the crime of Jim Crow segregation that had to be abolished, oppression of women and unequal rights of women, which had to be abolished. Poor people are now stepping to the forefront of this broad new movement to end poverty, as nobody knows better than do us poor people that poverty has to be ended, and that here in the richest country in the world, indeed, it's really the richest country in human history, there's no reason why people should go without food, without housing, without medical care, or without education, or without living wage jobs. And so that's the fight that we're waging.
And can you talk about this campaign then specifically to get the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights, the OAS, to look at housing as a human right?
Yeah, basically, the campaign has been struggling for the past 6 years, has been petitioning and requesting a hearing from the Organization of American States. We've also been petitioning the United Nations, and we've testified in front of the United Nations on several occasions, holding various different human rights tribunals. But this is really special. Finally, after 6 long years, the Legal Committee of the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign was able to secure this hearing, which, you know, it's an hour long, and we've got to cram an awful lot in an hour's time. Mm-hmm. but it basically represents the first time really ever that low-income people from not just the United States, but also from allied organizations in Canada and Brazil have a chance to raise what are just dire local issues of violations of their right to housing in an international setting, so that the international community can reckon with these violations of our economic human rights and come up with a series of recommendations and have some findings that later on we're going to hopefully be able to use in further potential lawsuits against the U.S. government for patently violating our rights. And what we're seeing now is, in this country is a real lack of taking all the opportunities and using all the wealth that we have at our disposal to lifting people out of dire poverty and to helping people better their circumstances and really live in decency and dignity. Here in this modern era, we have so much in terms of technical capacity, and there's so many resources, but it's just not reaching the most vulnerable in the population, myself included. Anyone who's not making, $50,000 or $80,000 or more a year is really being left behind in the new economy. And there's just been a vast trend to where wages have been reduced. The only new jobs are service sector jobs. And at the same time, the cost of living are just skyrocketing, including the affordability of housing. Rents and mortgages both are just skyrocketing. And at the same time, we're not making any more than we were, in terms of real dollars. For example, in 1968, that was 1968 was when the minimum wage was at its highest in terms of buying power. In terms of U.S. dollars, in terms of current dollars, in 1968, a minimum wage worker would have been making around $9 an hour. And here we are stuck at $5.15. In Maine, it's $6.35 an hour, but still, you can't get by. You can't raise your family. You can't certainly pay, a rent for a $650 a month apartment on $6.35 an hour, especially without health care. So basically, this hearing represents a huge landmark and a small victory leading to a larger victory, we hope, and in terms of turning around this tide of economic human rights violations.
And who will be speaking? Will there be a number of speakers or a number of written testimonies that will be presented? I know that many Maine residents will be included from the work that you've been doing down in Portland.
Yeah, basically, at this hearing, since it's not very long, there's going to be representatives from the U.S. as well as from Brazil and Canada who are going to be giving on-site testimony. But there's also going to be presenting a huge collection of testimonies representing thousands of us who documented violations of our right to housing, including over 50, almost 60 different individual testimonies just from Portland alone. But the folks representing the U.S. are actually resident activists from the housing project Cabrini-Green in Chicago who are facing mass eviction as the city of Chicago is determined to, quote-unquote, transform public housing, which basically means just demolish first and build later. And people are really have been just trying to fight and organize for the past, over 7 years to make the city of Chicago comply with their international as well as domestic economic human rights to have a house and to not be evicted from their homes. It's a real deep fight, because we're seeing in Chicago, just like in Portland and other urban centers, cities are trying to encourage economic development and people, developers that want to come in and build the real expensive, fancy condominiums and high rises. They tend to take precedence over the needs of the lowest income residents, and we're seeing that as a developing pattern over the past 10 years, and we're really trying to say, stop, wait, you got to, you know, we won't sit on the back burner while you destroy our homes.
We're talking with Jesse Leavier from Power, Portland Organizing to Win Economic Human Rights, about tomorrow's hearing before the OAS, Inter-American Commission on Human Rights, to look at the human right to housing. Can you talk briefly about the work that Power has been doing in Maine and the issues that Maine is struggling with homelessness and lack of affordable housing?
Yeah, I'd love to. Well, here in Portland, we, our incomes are far lower than the U.S. average, while at the same time, as a state, we come in 40th, a daunting 40th out of all 50 states in terms of housing affordability. So what we're seeing is we have high rents and at the same time low wages. We also, in Portland, we're finding, as across the state, there's been just a dire lack of subsidies that are designed to help low-income people get the housing that they need.
The
for example, what's that?
Sorry, for instance, Section 8.
Go yes, ahead. Exactly. Section 8. Section 8 vouchers are designed to help people acquire private apartments, basically, and they use the voucher to pay the landlord, and it usually is two-thirds of the value of the rent. But, you know, and this program has proven hugely successful in helping to lift families out of poverty. However, the Section 8 list right now, the waiting list in Portland, is frozen. It has been frozen for over a year now, and there's just on that waiting list alone, there's over 3,000 families just waiting for a voucher, to say nothing of an apartment. And, you know, at the same time, it's really difficult to find public housing. What we have in terms of public housing has, you know, is pretty much occupied, and there's really no new public housing that's being built to meet the demands of new families that are, you know, are looking for a place. So what we're seeing is, at the same time as we're having this housing crisis in terms of affordability, rents are skyrocketing. And at the same time, what's available to, you know, to help low-income people in terms of subsidies, just it's shrinking, and to the point where it's virtually non-existent. And right now also, under President Bush's proposed budget, we're lucky that HUD funding hasn't been, cut more than it has been, but it's basically it's been flatlined, so there's no increase, not even to make up for inflation. So we're facing pretty dire straits, and what we try to do with Power is to, organize low-income people to say, look, this is what's happening. Are you affected? And most people say, yeah, I'm having, terrible problems trying to get affordable housing that isn't, over 50% of my income. And we try to, come together, try to develop solutions, and to document when our rights have been violated, and to protest when necessary to call attention to, these dire human problems that exist in our community.
And I know you were, Power was present down at the RNC in the Poor People's Economic Human Rights March, and but tomorrow you'll be having a rally in Portland in conjunction with the human rights hearing in Washington, D.C. Can you talk about that briefly?
Yeah, we're really excited. We decided to hold a rally and a press conference here in Portland to coincide with this important historic hearing, because basically this is something that is not only a local issue and it's not only a national issue, it's both. And we really need to call attention to this problem in a way where people can see, that they're not alone. That, a lot of times people feel really isolated, and that it's their fault somehow that they're not able to make it, and that they're struggling and they're doing everything that they possibly can. They're trying to do everything right, but it's just practically impossible to pay the rent and to pay the bills and to pay for health care and for child care. And part of that problem is astronomical rents and a lack of dedication on behalf of our government to meet our economic human rights. So we're coming together tomorrow We've got a number of different local community organizations that are behind us, and we're really, you know, we're going to stick it to them, basically, and demand our human right to housing in this, you know, the richest nation on earth.
And where will that take place?
This is going to happen right in Monument Square here in Portland, and sort of the center of town. We're hoping to get lots of good press coverage, as well as we're hoping people will pass us by and give us a wave and a honk in support of a really important, vital human issue.
And that's at 4 o'clock. How can people get more information on POWER and the work you're doing here in Maine, and also the People's Economic Human Rights Campaign?
POWER, you can reach POWER by either calling 207-650-5092, or you can email us at POWER, that's P-O-W-E-R, at riseup.net. That's POWER at riseup.net. Or you can write to us at P.O. Box 4281, Portland, Maine, 04101. And to find out more about the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign, I strongly encourage listeners to, if you have web access, check out www.economichumanrights.org. It's a great website. It's updated frequently, and it's very educational. It talks a lot about the different actions the campaign has taken, and also about this current hearing. Again, that's www.economichumanrights.org. Another great site is universityofthepoor.org. The University of the Poor is the educational arm of the campaign, and it's basically charged with the mission of educating and helping to develop leadership as we build this big movement to abolish poverty.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us, Jessie Leah-Veer with POWER, Portland Organizing to Win Economic Human Rights.
Thank you so much, Meredith.
Bye. You've been listening to Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Meredith DeFrancesco and Amy Brown. Joel Mann engineered today's program. Andy Buckley does web and technical support. You can find more information by going to our website, radioactive at maineindiemedia.org. You can contact us here at the station or at radioactive at maineindiemedia.org. I gave the email. You can search for our website as well. Thanks for listening and acting.